Dear listeners, welcome to the Data Frontiers podcast. I'm your host, Valentine Gandhi. In this podcast series, we will explore how new data technologies are being used to address some of the most pressing issues of our time, such as COVID-19, climate change, infrastructure issues, diplomacy, and education. In 2020, the UK government commissioned a study that was undertaken by NIDA's Digital Futures Hub for the Frontier Technologies Program. This was done to review the digital data landscape and identify data technologies that had the highest potential for impact and use by the FCDO, as well as the wider international development community. This study was led by Matthew Shearing, and I was the technical lead for the study. The full study link is available in the description below. In these exciting podcast series, we will be taking a look at some of the recommendations raised in this report and will speak to thought leaders and practitioners at the front lines of implementing data technologies. And we sincerely hope our guests will inspire you to make better practical use of frontier technologies in your own work. So we look forward to having you listen in to our episode. Today, joining us is Melissa Prasad, who is the Director of New Business for Global Development at Frame. In this role, she works with partners to leverage geospatial data to design, layer, monitor, and evaluate programs globally. In addition, Melissa has years of experience in mobile messaging and data collection across sectors and has a general passion for technology and development. Melissa, I'm really excited to be talking to you, and we are very happy that you are with us this evening.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, welcome. And can you please briefly tell me about your current work, particularly on the Frontier Technologies Hub work that you did with COVID Action, and a bit about Frame and what it does in general?
Sure. At Frame, we map humanity. So we're leveraging machine learning to weave together the wealth of publicly and semi-publicly available data to provide the best possible picture of communities one square kilometer at a time. So when we're thinking about Earth observation data, we're working with satellite imagery and remotely sensed data on the environmental conditions on the ground. Also some validating inputs like nighttime illumination. But we're also using another input, which is household surveys that have been collected face-to-face and geolocated that are commissioned by large donors, the big agencies that are running these gold standard nationally representative surveys. And machine learning brings all of those data sets together to produce one square kilometer estimates of all of the human characteristics in a country. So you can now see and interact with data that says in this community, there are 45 people, 30 of which are facing food insecurity, and 20 of which have not completed primary education. And now you have this more complete baseline understanding of the conditions on the ground as you're planning your programming, you're allocating your resources, and you're making policy decisions. And so we've been able to do that in about 70 countries. And we were using this data across a number of sectors to answer business questions for solar home system companies who are trying to deploy their systems in new communities and identify new customer base for sustainable off-grid energy production. We were also working in health and agriculture. As you can imagine, the applications are quite broad. But about a year ago, the pandemic became the topic of the day, and enumerators were no longer able to move. Humans were no longer able to move to do your typical site visits and traditional development transformed, right? And our client base, who spans development actors, commercial entities, all came to us and said, we are very familiar with your data to answer our business questions, our operational questions. Can you help us understand the potential COVID risks in these communities? Because there's this pivot that we have to make to understand who's most vulnerable. And so the evolution is basically we started weaving together individual indicators about your proximity to others, intergenerational households. Do you have soap in your hand to in your home to wash your hands? And all of those factors to weave together these risk profiles that identified the most vulnerable communities to COVID transmission, complications due to comorbidities like smoking, obesity, and then measures of your engagement with society. Are you connected through traditional media channels? So can you hear key messages about how to stay safe? And also, are you engaging with the health system? And finally, understanding who's just most vulnerable to an economic shock, that especially this one spurred by the pandemic, so that resources can be deployed very quickly to those who were on the cusp, who had maybe not been considered in traditional food distribution programming or kind of resources in that kind of cash transfer experience. So that's how we were brought to COVID action. And those original risk profiles were rolled out in 5 countries. And now we're adapting those in a few ways. One is for new geographies, to have for governments and stakeholders to have this data at their fingertips. And 2, to start thinking about vaccine allocation, because we also have historical information on how successful previous vaccination campaigns have been. And that can help inform where there are roadblocks to delivering vaccines generally. And then pairing that with the COVID data on who's at risk and where your priority populations are, you can use this hyperlocal information to inform your rollout.
Thank you. That was a very comprehensive, and you clearly demonstrated how data can be used for evidence building and policy support. Also, can you walk us through a little bit about how do you kind of triangulate between emerging data sources and traditional data sources? I mean, often they are used parallelly or jointly to ensure we get the full picture. I mean, there's the objective observations, and then sometimes people's subjective perceptions also are important, because data in itself is inert and people tend to react different from what data is telling us. So what has been your experience on combining traditional data sources with emerging data sources?
It's a great question. And, you know, the nature of a household survey is that it's conducted over a year, 18 months. And by the time the data is published, we're already past the time that it was, you know, the kind of moment in time that it reflects. So part of the process is using some of the Earth observation data to say, okay, have conditions changed where we need to make some assumptions about where to distribute, where population is distributed? And there are organizations like WorldPop who are doing great work on modeling high resolution population density. Facebook is also doing this work. And so that's an input that helps us think about the distribution of people, but it doesn't change necessarily the statistic on the number of people who have completed primary education. It just adjusts where they are potentially in the country. The kind of more emerging technology data that's available, like call detail records or mobile data, is often layered on top of what we have to say, this is the best picture that we have from the data you know and trust. And here's where we can share information on where we know people are moving. So now you have an understanding of where people are potentially like sleeping at night, but throughout the day are moving to university, then to the workplace, and then back home. And that information is useful in thinking about when and how you're going to engage with your target population with key messages. Another example would be to think about attitudinal data. So you mentioned perceptions. We do some mobile phone surveys and primary data collection to start to ask those attitudinal questions, and have been testing modeling those indicators at the same resolution based on the wealth of data that we have already understanding the conditions on the ground. And we've been relatively successful in doing that, especially in countries with high mobile phone penetration and high internet penetration. that does create a divide, right? There is generally a data divide of who countries that are producing data and countries that are not. And so our kind of advancements are happening in areas where there's just more emerging data and new data types. And what we're facing this year is thinking of really kind of comprehensively through our R&D on how to get some of the same level of insights in data poor environments, because development and commercial work also happens there. And the questions could be addressed in the same way.
Thank you. One of the important points that was highlighted also in the study was the importance of context and issues of privacy and ethical issues. So when we talk about, let's say, eliminating bias in a traditional data sources, is very different compared to how you would deal with this context and ethical issues and privacy issues. So for those of our listeners who are not really data scientists, can you give us a simple illustration on how does your team deal with the privacy issues and context, and how do you go about analyzing and putting them in perspective?
Yeah, there's a couple of ways. I mean, at our baseline, we're using anonymized data to begin with. Even the household surveys that are collected, we're getting the cluster data. So we have a location, but we can't retrace who the respondent was. So that's our primary input into the model. The next piece is the resolution of the data that's being produced. So we do a lot of conflict modeling and vulnerability modeling that allows us to identify communities that are most at risk to specific issues. And that, at a 1 square kilometer resolution can be sensitive in thinking about mapping HIV prevalence or gender-based violence data sets. Those we tend to aggregate at a higher level. So you have 10 square kilometer resolution on it. And the analysis still is, miles above what currently exists spatially. And then the other is deciding which data sets are made public. And who has access to which data sets, either through our platform or through their own data platform and credentials. So I would say we have an imperfect answer, but at the root of it, the data that we are working with is anonymized, and any data that we collect is collected with kind of the respondent's safety in mind. We do a lot of work in kind of the gender equality space, and we have to think about the questionnaires quite carefully, because modeling those gender-based violence data sets at a high resolution can be risky.
Yeah, thanks for that. Many of our listeners and also many of our target audience of this podcast are FCDO program managers, and they're often not data scientists and social scientists, perhaps just like yourself. And you've made this transition from being a social scientist to managing a data science team and working for Frame, which is a data science organization. So where is the starting point? I mean, let's say an example, if FCDO colleague is faced with an issue where he or she feels that a data science or emerging data sources can add value to the work they are doing, how do they go about starting? Where's the transition? Can you walk us through some examples, perhaps from your own journey?
Yeah, I think the first step is perhaps less about a data science question and more about, do I need to understand something spatially, right? Does it matter do I need to know about someone's location or how different one community is from the next? And that's how I have engaged with our partners and collaborators is, sure, there are statistics out there for the state of interest that you're looking at. If you only need the state level statistic, then maybe you don't need data science and you don't need a Frame contribution to in advanced analytical techniques. But when you're thinking about spatial specificity and population characteristics, and really thinking about targeting subnationally, then there's a whole universe of partners that can help you think through how to best understand those communities. And they're going to be using techniques that are new and different because it's the way that the data is being produced at this time, right? It's an innovation that we were able to bring to the data space that allows you to get this level of granularity and understanding on the whole wealth of information. You know, there are companies and organizations who are looking at, land productivity and mapping plots for smallholder farmers through imagery that you couldn't do before. And that requires a whole different skill set. But if you want that level of data and knowing how different plot sizes are across a whole country, then start thinking about data science, start thinking about these types of organizations that can come to you and help you. Similarly, on the frame side, you want to know who's similar and who's different and where they are. Let's start thinking about data science as a potential partner.
Thank you. That was brilliant. I mean, that truly is what I think is the way to go, because we have to define the problem and understand the problem. And quite often it happens, we push the technology without understanding whether it solves the problem. And I really like your response on how, data science can come and it has its resources, but does it really fit in? And I'm sure our listeners would be happy to hear that. A little bit going back to the COVID Action Project, perhaps you can give us maybe 4 or 5 points on what it does and how the journey that you've described and the activities you were applied, since it was funded by the Frontier Technologies Hub, UK Aid. So you can demonstrate how the problem was identified and how data analytics added value to solving the the pandemic related issues. So maybe as a short example, you can give it us.
Absolutely. So we, learned about the COVID Action Challenge pretty early on and had just started producing individual indicators that were related to COVID. So I mentioned in the kind of introduction that we were we had customers who were requesting any COVID-related data that they could provide through private-public partnerships to government to try to support COVID response. And at that time, we were really thinking about individual indicators. So you're able to say, here's where your smoking population is, here's where your elderly population is, here's where nobody has soap to wash their hands, and thinking about mitigation. What we learned through that process, because we made a lot of that openly available, free to the public who was needing it, was that individual indicators are useful, but at the end of the day, most of our partners needed some consolidation, really a visual representation of who's most vulnerable, and then being able to quantify where and who was most vulnerable across a set of characteristics. So we came up with these more customizable risk profiles across the three themes: your COVID, like the virus itself, how you might engage with it, exposure to it, and the complications, your kind of connectedness to society, both through the health system and through communication channels, and then your socioeconomic risk. And those three themes emerged from this engagement. And our first round was funded to make 5 countries publicly available for these 5 risk profiles. And so in the evolution of COVID Action, by the time we were selected, the idea was, let's roll out more risk profiles to better understand more countries' risk to COVID and how to respond. And so it's operationalizing that data. Over the past year or so, this has also evolved. We've now moved into the vaccine allocation question. So our COVID Action scope has 3 points. One is why geospatial data is important to answering and responding to COVID-19. Two, where are the biggest risks? And three, where are your priority populations as you're thinking about vaccine allocation in your country? According to the World Health Organization, guidance on the phases for rollout and the framework of equity and disease reduction.
Thank you so much, Melissa. This is truly inspiring. As a closing remark, perhaps for our listeners new to frontier data technologies from FCDO or other colleagues, what is the most important thing you've learned about getting frontier data technologies into use? Maybe one message, one key message that you would like to share with the audience.
I think, so my key message would be there are a number of actors doing this work. And one of the best things that any practitioner can do is think about the final output they're looking for and match the provider to that, right? Be a little bit cautious and connect with the company in a way that you can ensure your output is going to answer the question that you need. Because we tend to believe that new technology can solve every problem. And in my experience, mobile data collection was the same thing, right? And mobile phones and mobile messaging was going to solve every social and behavior change challenge out there. And it's a tool in the toolkit, but it's not the silver bullet in terms of SBC or data collection. And I think that as we're thinking about frontier technologies, there is a fit for purpose. And I would select your partners with your purpose in mind and have them help you think about the fit.
Melissa, that was brilliantly put. I think that sums it in our episode, that these technologies are powerful and very useful. But again, identifying the utilization and the use case is the key to ensuring that they actually deliver on the promises that these technologies can bring to the table. We are really happy that you joined us today and shared your practical experience and your transition from being a social scientist to managing a data science team. And I'm sure our listeners were benefited and informative session. And we look forward to having you and discussing with you further on. Thank you again for joining us in today's episode.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. This was great.
Dear listeners, thanks again for listening to this episode of the Data Frontier podcast. If you wish to learn more about the work of our guests, please check out the links in the description. I would also encourage you to check out the full Frontier Data study, which can also be found in the link below. This podcast is funded by the FCDO, and I would like to thank Matthew McConaughey, the podcast content lead, and many thanks to our producers, Ben Walker and David Vigoroff. Please do check out our other episodes in this podcast series and get in touch with us if you wish to learn more or partner up on any projects. Contact information to reach us is also in the description. Thanks so much for listening and have a great evening or day wherever in the part of the world that you're joining us from. Thank you.